Dr. Michael Hudson, it's a pleasure to have you back in my tulip. So you are in Berlin?
Yep, at a meeting of the Buckler Foundation to discuss the financialization of the economy.
What is your take on the latest Greece bailout?
I've been talking to a number of bankers here and in Frankfurt, and they all believe that the European Central Bank will not agree to create money or to lend to governments. They said that would be the end of Europe because they have the idea that somehow it was the central bank creating credit to fund a budget deficit that led to the Weimar inflation. And I tried to remind them that the reason there was a hyperinflation is the same as there's been for every hyperinflation in history, namely the balance of payments pressure from debt service. It was Germany's pressure to pay reparations that led the central bank to print marks to throw on to the foreign currency markets to try to get enough British sterling and French francs to pay them so that France and Britain could pay the United States on the inter-ally debts that they owed for the wartime arms they bought so that the American economy would have enough money for Wall Street to buy the state municipal debt of German cities to give the foreign exchange to turn over to the Reichsbank to keep this triangular flow going. They don't realize that the central bank in Weimar and other times did not create credit to fuel a domestic budget deficit, but to pay a balance of payments deficit.
Right.
It's like a psychologist implanting a false memory in a child about how he's been abused. The Germans have this false memory implanted. So none of the bankers here think that it's a good idea at all for the central bank to be able to create credit. They think the terms have to be much harsher on Greece. And it's my understanding that in addition to the $50 billion that Greece has already agreed to privatize, it's going to add $17 billion more, presumably the Parthenon and other things. I'm having some people, TV people and radio, come up from Athens to interview me. I believe that the Athenians are out on the street to make it very clear that the reason that they are not agreeing to this bailout, ripoff, and privatization deal at all. And in order for any debt to be binding under democracy, the people have to agree. When Iceland was supposed to pay Britain and Holland, for instance, the president said, look, if we're going to push the economy into a dark age for a lost generation, the people get to vote on it. And of course, the Icelandic voters turned it down. Greece's president had exactly the same power, that of sort of a notary public having to sign. He could have said, I'm not going to sign this deal without voters having a vote. But that being a socialist government, in Europe as opposed to America, the socialists are the ultra right wing of the spectrum. They're the pro bank people that are essentially against running deficits, supporting the financial sector, against the working class. So socialism in Europe means essentially a rentier philosophy imposed at gunpoint, Chilean style, on the voters as a whole. So it's obvious that the Greeks are not going to go along as soon as there's an election. The fact that they have gone out on the street and opposed this deal gives them every legal right under international law to say we didn't have a vote in this. This was a captive government, and we have all of the bribery information on them. We're repudiating the debt in toto. And the Greeks can say, like Stalin said of the Pope, how many troops does the Pope have? Greeks can say, how many troops does the European Central Bank have? What are you going to do to us?
You mentioned, you know, I just come back from a conference over at the Federal Reserve in Boston, and it's pretty clear that the central bank in this country feels like it's been put in the position of having to compensate for a lot of bad decisions made by the legislature over a very long period of time. Do you think the European Central Bank feels that way about the European governments?
Yes, but for the wrong reasons. Ever since the colonels, the Greeks haven't taxed wealth. The European Central Bank says that they haven't taxed the workers enough. The Central Bank wants a flat tax on Greek labor to be increased, salaries cut. This is supposed to help Greece work its way out of debt, when actually, if you're pushing the economy into a recession, there's no way it can work its way out of debt.
Sure.
And the Germans keep expressing surprise that that the fiscal problems in Greece get worse and worse as they bleed the economy.
So what we, you and I have talked about this before, this compulsion to send an economy into a death spiral by its creditors. I mean, this happened to Argentina, happened to many other countries. Why do they keep doing the same thing over and over again? I don't get it.
It's not insane. They do it because they're taking the money and running. They're saying, we're going to squeeze out as much as we can, as long as we can, and we're going to stash it all abroad. It's a pure looting operation. And they're going to say, as long as they're letting us take it, we're going to try to get the best position we can. And it would be crazy if this were the economy doing it, but these are basically the financial parasites doing it. And they're killing the host economy because they believe they can go to another host in the BRIC countries.
So the idea is to take the 50 cents on the dollar and go do it someplace else?
Well, the 50 cents on the dollar, it's very interesting. That's all voluntary. Now, because it's voluntary, the banks can't collect on their credit default swaps agreement. And last time they said it was going to be voluntary, the Institute of International Finance, they promised to deliver 70% of the votes and asked for a 30% haircut last spring, and they couldn't even get 70% for a 30% haircut. So there's a question as to whether the bankers are going to voluntarily agree to cut the 50%. The IMF already says that it's not going to cut its holdings of Greek debt by a penny. So one wonders whether the banks are really going to go along or whether this is all a pretense to enable some of the banks to cash out. And obviously they're cashing out now because the euro has gone up from $1.39 to $1.42 just today in the last few hours.
Yeah.
There's obviously a euphoria thinking that somehow these guys, by making promises, have solved everything, but it's just as if Obama came and made a promise. It has about as much reality to it.
So you asked me why I thought the U.S. stock market is rallying on once again in euphoria on this latest bailout plan. And, you know, my theory going way back to the middle of 2010, once this whole process of reflation via monetary and fiscal stimulus started, is that the markets are being largely driven by funds now. More than 50% of the capital are hedge funds and other players, and they're all basically been turned into criminologists. And so what they're doing is they're betting on the direction the market's going to go. They don't have any idea at all whether any of this is going to work. They're just betting, okay, we think it's going to go down because people are going to lose confidence in the latest plan. We think it's going to go up because people are going to be confident in the latest plan, and so on and so forth. So it's kind of a I call it the escalation, de-escalation trade.
I think that's right. I think a lot of this is also computer-driven cross purchases as the euro, as the currency's going up. So it's a currency play in part two. But you're right. It's very short-term, very quick in and out computer programs driving it up.
At the end of the day, though, if we look back at every other instance of this process and any other country that's been in a situation, eventually it comes to an end. The music stops and there's not enough chairs. Maybe this is the last round?
I hesitate to say that, but you wonder how long it'll take for reality to hit into the rest of the economy. John Major had an article in the Financial Times today saying that, he saw all of this when at Lisbon when he convinced Britain not to go into the euro area, although he thinks taxes should be raised even more and made more deflationary also. But at least he realizes that unless Europe is willing to transfer a lot of fiscal money to Greece, like the American government would transfer to a depressed area, it's just not going to work over the long term.
So my theory, and tell me if you think this is crazy or not, is that, you know, over time, the eurozone will wind up jettisoning some of the weaker players that should never have been part of the euro in the first place, like Greece, for example.
Nobody can figure out what's going to happen to the overall bonds denominated in euros. Suppose that happens and other people hold bonds. Are they going to get northern euro securities or southern euro securities? Are all the bonds going to be broken up into a northern and southern euro? It's going to be a huge bookkeeping problem.
You know, without a central euro, right, a central treasury, there'll be, you know, there are Greek euro bonds, and I assume those would simply be converted the drachma bonds at some point.
Right. That's probably going to happen. What about the Greek holders of euro bonds? Will they be treated like President Roosevelt treated gold holders in 1933? Probably.
Yeah, that's but right. They get a big haircut.
Yeah, but the rich Greeks have already moved all their money offshore, I'm told. You know, everybody's sort of, the rats have fled the sinking ship. So that's one of the big problems. The Greek people with money see that the pensions are being cut back, the government's cutting back whatever it can, and they're just moving their money out, leaving an empty shell.
Well, people remember what the process was with, for example, Argentina. The default yep. happened in 2001, and it was announced in 2002 after it was all over, right?
Yep.
So the process is, first everyone gets all the money out of the country, the currency collapses, the bond market collapses, then you announce that you've defaulted after everybody has their money out, everyone who matters anyway.
Right.
So they think that's likely, you know, what's the most of this theater around working out a plan is buying time for insiders to get their money out.
That looks like what's happening in practice. Doesn't it look that way to you?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, you have to think like somebody who's, you know, a significant stakeholder inside of Greece who's looking at this and saying, well, these guys are never going to work it out, so what's my plan, you know, to get my money out of here?
Or they just know they're not going to be taxed abroad, and in Greece they will. I mean, I know people in Greece and who've had their pensions, their private pensions that they've already paid to, private pensions cut back. And, for instance, I know the son of someone who went to collect his unemployment check in Athens and was told, well, your family has enough money so that we've cut your unemployment check in two. Well, meanwhile, the father's pension with a big American company was cut back.
Right.
I mean, this is crazy.
Well, you know, my philosophy about pensions, and I know this is a bit controversial with some of my readers, but, you know, I think that if you're putting your money into a fund and there's a commitment to pay you back, it's your money. So anything else is theft.
That I agree with that. These are actual savings. They're not speculations. They're actual money that's been saved and put aside that is now not being paid to the pensioners.
The Occupy Wall Street movement. What's your opinion of that?
I think it's as much a political movement as it is an economic movement. I think they're absolutely frustrated at the fact that there's no electoral choice to express their opposition to the right-wing Republican policies that Mr. Obama has pressed. There's a real hatred of Obama that I see talking to the people there, and there's a lot of discussion about saying, gee, maybe we should have remembered that here's a guy who went to Joe Lieberman, the most corrupt slime ball in Congress, and said, I want you to be my mentor. And before the 2008 elections, he went to Connecticut and campaigned for Lieberman against the Democratic candidate. And they should say, what kind of guy would go to Mr. Lieberman, you know, except for someone who also is a right-winger? So they're very frustrated. A lot of them are students who have huge student loans. They're sleeping out. They were sleeping out in the plaza because otherwise they'd be at home with their parents, which they don't want to be because they can't afford an apartment because they don't have jobs. So I think they feel that they've played the game right and that they've been double-crossed by Obama, and now they realize that they can't get any hearing within the Democratic Party. And again I hear the hope that, well, they hope that a Republican, no matter how crazy, is going to be elected as president, because then the Democratic Congress can oppose them from pushing forth the right-wing policies that Mr. Obama is trying to push. They look at him, as quite rightly, as being to the right of Michelle Bachmann, because even Michelle Bachmann wanted to oppose the bailouts. And so they feel this guy's a real double-crosser, and because he's played the race card, he has the support within the primaries of the minorities in the constituency. But will they get out to vote, or will other... I forget the guy from Princeton, the professor who's been talking against him. But a number of people are, blacks have come out against Obama saying, look, he's hurt the blacks and the minor and the Hispanics more than any other group because he's declared war on the poor, basically.
Do you think there's any hope that this Occupy Wall Street movement will learn to differentiate between the kind of capitalism that has been, that we could characterize as originating from the fire sector, from the kind that actually produces jobs and economic growth?
I think that's going to be the next stage, and that's what neoclassical economics hasn't done for quite a while. On Naked Capitalism site, Eve Smith played a speech by Steve Keen at the Sydney, Australia sit-ins, where he said just exactly that. And I've been asked when I get back to New York in late November if I'd address the Occupy Wall Street people. And of course, that's what I'm going to say. And in fact, that's the economic model that I've developed is what I'm talking about here in Berlin. So yes, I think the Occupy Wall, there are a number of people that they're listening to. They're listening to Eve Smith, Bill Black, myself, all of us are emphasizing the FIRE sector, and that's why it's Occupy Wall Street, not Occupy the White House.
A question I dropped to you in an email, and this is really a mystery to me, is how is it that the left has come in the United States to occupy the anti-corruption law and order side of things?
It's because all over the world, the left-wing parties, the Social Democrats and the Labor parties, in every single country, they've taken the side of the banks and finance capital against industrial capital. I'm not sure why that is. A European explained that it all seemed to be that this was the wave of the future and a service society. But today in Iceland, by the way, there's a very large meeting in Iceland that is on this very topic. The government invited the IMF to have some of its people come, and also Paul Krugman and Martin Wolf of the Financial Times. What happened after September 2008 was that the, as you know, the Icelandic banks went under. Vulture funds bought the bank bonds at a small fraction of their value, and the government deal with them was, okay, the government listened to the IMF. The IMF said, look, you better sell these banks to private banks. And the deal was the vulture funds that bought the banks at, say, 30 cents on the dollar, were to write down the debts to 30 cents on the dollar. But instead, not only did the vulture funds acting like a collection agency would in the United States and trying to collect the whole 100 cents on the dollar, but in Iceland, there's a deal that the principal is indexed to the consumer price index, which reflects import prices. So the principal of the debts have gone way up over 100% in Iceland, while the vulture funds have got a huge free lunch. The IMF and the government came in and said, we want to give the Social Democratic government and the Greens got together and said, we don't care if we go into depression. 8% of our population has emigrated since the last census, mostly going to Norway, and say, you know, we don't care. We have to take care of, number one, the financial sector, because without the financial parasite, the host will die. They didn't say it that way, but that's my paraphrase. So you have the Social Democrats on the far right of the spectrum, and what in the 1930s used to be called fascism. And they're just as vicious. They refuse to, as Mussolini was. There are riots. There's a huge demonstration a few months ago, just around the time Occupy Wall Street was there. The government was giving away the economy to the vulture funds. So the Icelanders brought oil drums, 22-gallon oil drums, and were banging them, so that hoping that the parliament, the all thing, wouldn't be able to hear to pass the law. But they did pass the law, and they say, you know, until there's an election, we're going to continue giving the economy away. We're social Democrats. And this means that whatever is happening on Wall Street, the Occupy Wall Street, throughout Europe, they're not going to do it through the old socialist parties or the social democratic parties or the Labor Party. And there's a discussion, what are we going to call this new party that's against the FIRE sector? Well, in the 19th century, there were names like the Progressive Party, the Populist Party, the Greenback Party. I'm trying to figure the Socialist Party too, but I'm trying to figure out.
None of those fit. It's got to be something new. I was thinking, this sounds a little might sound a little hokey, but the Prosperity Party, because that's really what it's about, right? And if you're going to be pushing this idea that no, the problem is not capitalism, the problem is in excess of rentiers in the economy, and that's what's holding us back. I don't know. I think that would be a pretty good name for it.
You'd have to call it the New Prosperity Party to differentiate it from the old service economy.
I suppose, but prosperity is not currently connected with anything that I could think of. So well, it's kind of neutral.
Prosperity, in other words, they're going to want to differentiate themselves from the Tea Party.
Yeah, the Tea Party is more libertarian.
I think most of the Occupy Wall Street people are too, but they're educated and younger, not old and sectarian and crazy Christian.
The ones I talked to in Boston, I admittedly, they saw probably a subset because it was evening, and then the next day I went there it was raining, so it's kind of the hardcores. They didn't strike me as particularly libertarian. They were very much focused on this distribution of wealth issue and corporations are bad and capitalism is bad and all that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh. I didn't sense that here in New York.
Yeah, I think, were you in Times Square?
No. I was supposed to. I had to be down on Wall Street, and I walked by one morning just talked to them for a few minutes. Got a sense of it, and they all seem to be very positive. The feeling I get by reading what they've been posting is they're very careful to be leaderless, and they're careful to avoid coming up with a program, because they say if we come out with a policy, the whole system is so rotten that a marginal change won't cure things. Like forgiving student debt, even that wouldn't cure things. The whole system has to be changed, and they don't know how to do it. So all they're doing is there were earlier periods of American history called the Great Awakening. And maybe all this will lead to some kind of great awakening, because from the right to the left of the spectrum, there's a realization that the current system isn't working, that something's structurally wrong, and as you and I point out, it's the fire sector.
It's also the system of campaign finance that maintains the fire sector.
Yes, that's certainly something that they're all in agreement on. They, when you say they're against corporations, what they're obviously against is the corporations buying the campaign system, so that it's what they give to Mr. Obama that leads him to serve them, delivering his constituency by fooling them.
Fair enough. Well, we'll keep an eye on that movement and see how it evolves. Thanks for your insights on the on what's going on in Europe, and wish you the best of luck with the rest of your conference.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Good talking to you.